I've got economic hefty time. Looks and gloomy, oblique on my spirit. I'm recession with days black. You can cut me down. Things feel corrupt. An evil, a degenerate, way down. A contaminated criminal seeking the sun.
As the cruel sea said, it won't last. It won't last.
Man, I saw some people rip Midnight Oil today.
Yeah, what was that about? Just reviews for their show, or are they unwoke now? Midnight Oil are unwoke.
Just the fact that an ex-government minister is up there singing about, you know, inequality and...
Yeah, I think that just tells you how much anybody in government can do about anything.
Mm.
That once you're in the system, there's nothing you can do to change anything.
You're just part of the machine.
You're just part of the party machine, and I'm sure Garrett's. And this is the other thing. I mean, you can snark about it, but I would argue he's probably done more good with the lyrics to those songs than he's done. I did have a friend who tried to tell me that Garrett was personally responsible for the death of the Sparky who got killed.
Oh, really?
Pink Bats. And I'm like, wouldn't that be like his direct supervisor who put him in an unsafe workplace rather than some dude who was responsible for sponsoring some legislation that had fuck all to do with the fact that he worked for a boss who was a fuckwit, which is politics. It's a bag of shit with a fucking bow on it, which is also made of shit.
And so, like, Albion Loveden said to me, what did he say?
Have you recorded all your conversations with Albion Loveden?
No.
Albion Loveden is a, ladies and gentle pong, is a friend of ours who has had a long affair with the musics.
No.
It was reviewed for various websites that don't exist anymore.
We won't include this in. He was saying that...
Why are we not including this? This is good hashtag content.
Well, I mean, chips.
Yeah, but we know you're fucking unprofessional. We should get Ben on here. Some stage, because he's got proper grown up opinions about music, except that some of the bands he likes are fucking toilet.
I was thinking he'd be a great guest for the 100th episode.
The 100th or after dark.
Yeah. Mm.
What's that? That's probably 12 weeks away.
Not that far away.
Three months away.
Mm.
Stop eating chips, you fucking behemoth of irresponsibility.
Yum, yum, yum. Hey, I'm going to finish this chip.
I have to podcast with a fucking Oompa Loompa.
This is going in the after dark, by the way.
No, this is the start of the episode.
No.
This whole thing is included.
No.
This whole motherfucking thing is in the show. It's in the show.
I'm going to go through and take out all my...
This is the show.
Take out all my chip eating. And then
Do you have a chip filter? Is it like the noise reduction? The chip reduction? Every time we go... It suddenly goes, well, actually, I have a very well-argued point to make. I just have to finish swallowing this chip.
Hey, I wanted to bring it up in the sport, but we went in an hour and a half in.
Well, we only had to wrap up the fucking NBA season. The only sport we talk about on the fucking podcast. Surprisingly enough, it went for an hour and a half. Stop complaining about your free content, you pack of chodes.
Oh yeah, that was funny, that conversation this week about
the people like it when I get angry, apparently. So, you know.
Since we are a Trans Tasman podcast, I wanted to bring up John Clark because
So we're all about trans rights here on the podcast.
Because
John Clark, very fucking very funny dude.
Probably one of the biggest, oh, I wouldn't say influences because I have nowhere near that level of wit and timing, and I just, the guy was just fucking amazingly talented. Like some of the other stuff that he did, like the reason I wanted to bring it up in the sporting podcast is because he did that documentary on a sport in Australia and how it related to the way Australians look at themselves. And it was so, so fucking sharp that you just felt like you were cutting yourself every time you watched it. And it was so dry. Like the whole thing, the whole intro of the first episode was like, you know, Australians are tied into sport and sport makes them who they are. And I love sport and, you know, and then there's just this pause, this little pause. And he goes, I'm from New Zealand. And it was just so fucking good because it just made him, it's just like, look, I love sport. But I'm just
an observer, which kind of sets up the context for why he can be the observer in this piece. Mm. I'm coming to you as a person who's outside the space that you're in, and I've got some things that I've observed that I think are kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it creates that narrative space you need if you're in that situation. But of course, he had a long history with sport. He did. He did the games, which was one of the greatest mockumentaries ever, where he and his staff pretended to be the organizing committee behind the Sydney Games and did some astonishingly bad things that were probably only slightly less worse than the things that actually happened. The one that will always stick with me is the 90-meter, 100-meter running track episode.
So our au pair is an Italian who was born in Morocco. So she's got no context for, other than the Olympics, obviously, a global. And I showed her that bit. And she was fucking rolling on the floor laughing. That's how good he is, man. She just could not stop laughing.
That joke works for anybody, anywhere in the world. Because, I mean, you just dub it. I didn't think it was dubbed into fucking Norwegian and Christ knows what else and went all around the world because it works. It was just so beautifully crafted.
Oh, and just the look in his eyes, that little sparkliness. So what you're telling me is the 400 meters track is 400 meters and the 200 meters track is 200 meters and the 100 meters track is about 100
meters. It's about 100 meters.
But like, the look in his eyes when he's selling meters. It is like, I know, I'm fucking onto you, man. I'm onto you.
But that was the same look that he and Brian Dore used to share through fucking decades of, I think it was originally A Current Affair and then the 7:30 report, where they used to do their Friday bit, which was always piercingly well executed and just landed every single time, right up till the end. But he also did Fred Daggish, who was a national hero in New Zealand as this kind of gumbooted icon. He did the voices for Footrot Flats, A Dog's Tale, and of course Murray Ball only passed away a few weeks ago.
I did not.
It's double flags down for in New Zealand at the moment.
I did not know he did the adaption, the screenplay for Footrot Flats. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
He did the screenplay. He wrote
the flags would be at half mast if they hadn't blown off in Cyclone Cook.
That is like. You know, that movie, that was the first movie I saw on a big screen, Footrot Flats, and it scared the fucking shit out of me, and I still love it. I think I saw it when I was
rats with the big tails.
Yeah, I saw that again recently. I think I saw it when I was seven.
Yeah, that's about right, because it was 86. It was about 86, I think, that came out. So I would have been, I would have been eight when it came out, I suppose. And I can't believe you would have been seven, because you're older than me. But, you know, there was the rats and the dogs and the vermin were so visceral, you know, the New Zealand farm by storm was so beautiful, was so accurately represented in its disgusting verminous kind of condition that it was the rats were particularly traumatic.
Yeah.
Good little film, and the Murphys, which is fairly lazy racial stereotyping, and these fat, lazy Irish people who still talk like they're out of Cork. That was one thing that was leveled at Murray Ball, was that his Maori characters were a bit fucking 50 stereotype, but they were also kind of trying to subvert the lazy stereotype of Maori kids as well.
I don't know if you've read any John O'Grady or Nino Colotto. I don't know.
Is he the one who did They're a Weird Mob?
Yeah. So if you read some of his stuff, like, there is some racial stuff in that that's
grim,
not woke, to use a term from before.
It's very asleep.
But it was written in the...
It's had a bunch of NyQuil and is pulling Zeds. That's how unwoke it is.
It was written in the 50s, and you can really see that if you read it through that perspective, you can see why that stuff is in there. Because that stuff was just like, if you were at a pub or a restaurant or anywhere in Australian life, that stuff was the prevalent viewpoint.
You're inclined to give that a pass in context because you know they would do that differently now.
But things
that were dreadful anachronisms, sort of prisoners of their own history at the time. You kind of feel, I know you would have tried harder to get this right. Mm. You know, under the social mores of 2017, and of course in 2050, we're all going to look like a bunch of fucking massive racists, bigots, and fuckwits compared to the social mores of then.
Yeah.
Assuming we haven't all been hit with a Moab bomb and vaporized, which will be great.
But he had that same razor sharp, insightful view into society that John Clark did. And I love reading his stuff, even though, you know, you have to spin it within the context that it is. But some of his later stuff is actually a little bit more balanced with, you know, it has less of that broad brush, I guess you say. But man, I went through a rat hole when the new news about Clark. I just watched so many Clark and Dawe clips. I watched that Sporting Nation. I'd never seen that Kiwi movie. I don't know if you saw that kicking around, the used car salesman one.
I've seen the bit where he's a used car salesman. Oh, I don't think I've seen the whole film.
No, I haven't seen the whole film. I didn't even know the film existed, but he is just so fantastic. Like,
Is it Goodbye Pork Pie? What's the film there? What's the film that he's in?
I don't know.
It might have just been a fairly mediocre thing that he.
The lead was the guy from Once Were Warriors, so.
Yeah, but Tim Morrison's been in fucking everything.
Yeah,
let's face it. There are envelope openings that have had Tim Morrison turn up in them. Good dude, Tim Morrison. So somewhere either at home, either here or in Australia, I have a DVD of Fred Dagg, like the original, because he was like a character that he created in the 70s. It's like this ridiculous 70s, it's ridiculous New Zealand farmer with no fucking idea. But he actually appeared on a kind of like the equivalent of Landline. They had this show called Country Calendar, which had like a half hour doco every week about a story about farming. And his original story, this Fred Dagg thing, was filmed effectively as a straight documentary that went on Country Calendar. But if you watch it, it's clearly, you know, Spinal Tap style. It's just a massive piss take. And it's still amazing. And they repeated it on Country Calendar because the same show was still running on TV1 in 2017 as it was in 1975. A
very light Landline then.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Actually, one of the dudes on Landline in Australia was an old flatmate of my dad's. I went to teachers' college together, and he said it was very hard to take the man seriously, take him seriously on Landline after having seen him trying to light his own farts out the window of their flat.
Oh dear!
But that's just maybe. People of our age, and we're both, you know, 40 plus or minus a few years. We grew up either on this side of the Tasman or the other with John Clark as a point of reference, as a comedic device. I mean, I remember when I was a little kid, I remember him on the Gillies Report doing his farnarkling reports, his sort of fake sports reports that sort of captured all the ridiculousness of sports. John Birmingham wrote a lovely column, which was sort of a throwback to one of one of John Clark's fine arcling columns, even referencing the often injured hero of fine arcling, Dave Sorensen, which I thought was a lovely touch. So yeah.
Yep.
John Clark.
Yeah, I just
wonder what Brian Dawe's going to do for a job now.
Oh, look, he does heap other stuff. So he, you know, he not that he'll be fine, because I think they're all pretty upset about it. But I think he won't be fine, but he won't struggle for work. Put it that way.
Yeah, we're interested to see what he can do on his own, because effectively with the Clark partnership, he was the professional straight man, which is an important job, because you've got to know how to pitch that.
Well, plus
there's a lot involved.
Plus, Clark wrote all the scripts, so
that's it.
You know, that's dead in the water. I don't think anyone's actually I'm not a massive fan of Charlie Pickering, but him and Tom
Gleason. I liked him on Triple J. I haven't liked him that much at his own things, but
him and Tom Gleason actually, before Clark died, did a Clark and Dawe sort of sketch tribute to Clark and Dawe, and it's actually really fucking funny, because Tom Gleason's like going, no, I'm pretending to be John Clark, but I'm just being myself, and the whole joke, you know, of how Clark pulled off not doing any impressionism at all, but completely nailing other people. Yeah.
Being totally deadpan, but just in tone of voice, yeah, was pulling these things off. Mm. And Tom Gleason's fucking good too. Yeah. I have to say that he's a strong talent, that boy. Mm. I say boy, he's older than me. So we move on
to some tunes
indeed. To so the two albums that you picked last week were by Goldfrapp.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a ginger girl in front of an electronic band, and Black Joe Lewis and the Honeybears, which is apparently Marshawn Lynch in front of a funk soul band, according to the picture on the front. I thought he was going to run beast mode right over the offensive line. Where do you want to start with these? Should we start with start with the Frapp?
Let's start
Should
with
we
God
frap
Frapp,
it up?
Because that's pretty easy.
The album's called Silver Eye. So the question I want to put to you, is this album better than GoldenEye? Either the 1995 film or the N64 game? So, follow-up question, which is the best way to play GoldenEye?
Well, I didn't play computer games back in the day, so you'll have to I'll have to pass on that one, but I would say
you didn't live in a share house that had an N64.
There was other share houses that had an N64, but no, I never lived in a share house that had an N64.
Oh God! So we had them, but it was many years after N64s were a thing. So you had to kind of keep them running with secondhand bits and pieces from fucking theft converters. But the best way to play GoldenEye N64, if you're having a share house party, was to put it on one shot kills. So literally one shot would kill people rather than needing to blow them up with a rocket launcher, and you go into the library where there's lots of pistols, and you just play pistols, one-shot kills in the library, because that evened out the playing field if you had a whole bunch of people at your share house party who didn't know the stages and where all the weapons were hidden. So literally it's find a gun and run like fuck and try and ping people. So that's a much more interesting conversation than the one I was going to have about this album, which is boring as fuck.
It's Goldfrapp, but lesser.
it started well. This is the annoying thing about this album. It started out sounding Goldfrappy, or Goldfrappe, which is probably something they sell at Starbucks. The first two tracks are pretty strong. You know, they're interesting. They've got kind of that sultry, kind of ethereal female box, the fuzzy synth loops. Sort of felt kind of, that was all right. It'd be kind of a malevolent electro pop, but then it turned into Enya.
Yeah,
and that's not anything you want.
Even the first couple of tracks, it was just like, this is.
Well, you're more immersed in Goldfrapp's back history.
Yeah,
so it's still like a homeopathic dilution of the Goldfrapp.
It felt like a pale imitation to me. So,
And you know what? It started out as it felt sedated. It felt kind of insipid. At one point, it felt like fucking Dido, which I don't have anywhere to go from there. It was just
yes.
And I know that you picked this because it was it's sort of that white whale, that the old band that's put out an album that's as good as what they did before. But on a scale of 1 to The Day Is My Enemy by Prodigy, this is basically a garbage Strange Birds. Yeah, really. It's just meh.
Pretty bad.
Meh. GoldenEye was a good multiplayer game, though.
Sure. I'm confident that it was better than this album, so.
So, apparently, folks, if you remember GoldenEye, unlike Beezer, I was hoping that was a great cross-promotional pop culture reference that would get us lots of conversation, but apparently it wasn't. They've made a GoldenEye N64 emulator on the internet, so you can play it in a fucking browser.
Really?
I think you need to use Google to find that, but apparently... But as I said, the best use of GoldenEye was four-player mode, one shot, one kill pistols, and just running around shooting people randomly.
Mm.
Because it involved no prior knowledge. And it annoyed my flatmate who'd memorized all of the levels, where all the weapons were, where all the armor were. It meant that he was fucked because he couldn't actually use any of that knowledge, and just ended up getting beaten by fucking hacks like me.
dear. So what did you think of the other album?
The Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears, Backlash.
Mm.
Out of Austin, Texas. A beast mode with beats. So the word on this album is that he's much more kind of funk and soul themed, but this is a little bit more harder edged. So this album has very clear kind of funk soul blues influences. You can feel sometimes he sounds a bit like Howlin' Wolf and Marvin Gaye and James Brown. I felt that it was somehow less than the sum of its influences, though. It just didn't quite add up as a compelling album. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't great. It wasn't memorable. It sounded good, but I just don't feel like it did enough.
Yeah, I got the same feeling. And again, that first track,
first track wasn't indicative at all.
No,
it was kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, and I got into it. I think I must have had it on and then paused it to go and do something at work and then came back and sort of started on track 3 and enjoyed the album a lot more from track 3 to the end without that first track in it. Look, it's got some brass in it, so I enjoyed it. But
well, I was going to say there's more brass than class. And I have to say the single that got my attention that was on Discover Weekly or whatever it was on Spotify was PTP, which is a very funk soul kind of number with a big brass and influence to it, and you know, funk guitars and all the rest of it. And I figured the rest of the album would be like that. And parts of it are, but there's lots of it that aren't. So which is a little bit annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see where what they were coming at, and it just didn't sort of hit the marks for me.
Yeah. They had the right building blocks, but they didn't put them together in the right order. It's a bit like a meal that's been, you know, they've got all the right ingredients, but they haven't quite managed to figure out how to make them work together.
The interesting thing about this, though, right, is I listened to the first time I listened to these two albums, I listened to them straight through, both of them. And then I went back and listened to Satan Takes a Holiday again because I wanted to listen to something that I would enjoy. And I fucking did. That's a cracking album. I love that album. That is a great album.
I didn't want to listen to either of the last week's albums because I thought, that would just make everything worse.
Yeah, so but I really liked that album. And I just wanted to go back and do something that was really fun and enjoyable. And that was that album, so...
And it only took 28 minutes too, so you can fit it in, and it's like a BBC sitcom. You still got time for ads at the end.
Mm.
Yeah, so that wasn't quite what you wanted.
No, that was a swing and a miss with both of those. But
yeah, although
Black Joe was a better swing than Goldfrapp. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Goldfrapp was I mean, that was really a... And that was kind of annoying because I have to say I did enjoy the first two tracks on that album. And then afterward, it just disappeared up its own ass. It just became dismal and insipid.
Yeah.
It just it wasn't even interesting. I mean, it was... It still had that kind of drawn back aesthetic, but it was just not even interesting.
Hmm. Anyway, trying to find that mythical good band in that sort of range that I want.
That old band that did an album years ago that might have come back into another
album. Yeah, no, it's more I want that trip hop electronic music album, and I just haven't found it yet. But anyway, the classic.
Yeah.
Tell me about Rocket Science. Now, the thing I found interesting is there is a big difference between the first and the second track on this album as well.
Is there?
Yeah.
I would say between the first two tracks are pretty similar.
Is it the second and third?
Second and third, yeah. Because what I'd forgotten about this album was the number of kind of spaced out jams.
Yeah, yeah. Which I really enjoyed. I like those a lot more.
That kind of sci-fi. Well, that's interesting because they're the songs I couldn't remember because I would have deleted them off the CD of iTunes at the time because this was the early days of iTunes and burning CDs and that sort of stuff. This isn't as good as I remembered it because of all the completely spaced out, fucked up jams, and they needed more songs like "Run Like a Gun" and those upbeat but still fucking insane '60s sci-fi surf rock fucking theremin infused weirdo shake your ass kind of songs. The thing I remember about this band is that they could make any crowd shake their ass because they just. They infused everything they did with such an energy. And even the spaced out space rock kind of psycho jams were interesting as well in the context of playing live. I'm not entirely sure they captured that with this album, but...
Was only their second album?
I think third.
Third? They should be knocking that out of the park, really, shouldn't they?
Well, I don't know how well you translate that to the fucking audience, but it's like last week we talked about remembering how good festivals were through the fog of nostalgia and forgetting all the shit stuff, forgetting being sunburnt and strung out and fucked up and waiting for the sun to go down and overestimating how great things were through that nostalgic lens. I think I've kind of done that with this album.
Although
it is a good album.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
it.
I don't know.
I can't defend it as a classic though. There's enough tracks that make you go, oh, really? Nah, I think I'm done. There's enough of that makes you just go, nah. So I don't think I can defend this as a classic, but it's a good album. And they were a good band, and I'm glad we got a chance to remind people that they were a good album.
Mm.
They were a good band. Sorry.
Yeah. And I've been trying to track down a couple of old Alley people to remember whether or not we did have them.
You don't remember a fucking thing, do you? Because your brain is cactus.
Yeah, my brain is cactus. That's correct.
Too much smoke.
Probably. Definitely back that in those days, that's for sure. I quite enjoyed the spaced out wandering jams, to be honest.
It all has a place. I just can't defend it as a classic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough.
It doesn't sound like I need to defend it because you're quite positive about it. Mm. So it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. What do you got for new stuff?
Let's talk about some other stuff that's happened during the week. Kendrick put out a new album.
Mm.
Are you excited?
Not really.
Are you a white writer on Twitter who needs to point out how cool they are? You better tweet about how much you love Kendrick.
There is a hip-hop album coming out in 14 days, which I am excited about, but it's not by Kendrick. And you...
Limp Bizkit are back?
You actually... Well, one of the... Where is it? I'm going to have to look this up.
You know who's back? Fucking Body Count.
Body Count?
Live from 1992. Fucking Body Count are back. Iced Tea. It is amazing because it keeps. I've had a couple of the tracks turn up on my Discover Weekly or Release Radar, one of the two. And it's literally just Iced Tea doing spoken word poetry over the most cheesy 80s chug-a-chug metal guitars you could imagine. It's like, this was ever popular? What the fuck? Well, this is terrible.
Well, I see you that.
So my album for this week is Body Count. No, I'm not going to do that.
I see you that and I raise you a Linkin Park single featuring Pusha T and Stormzy.
Oh, Stormzy?
Yes.
Is Stormzy hard up for a gig?
I don't
look,
know.
Can we not offer Stormzy a few bucks?
Linkin Park.
That's not right.
Linkin Park and Stormzy. I'm scared to listen to it.
Yeah, I would be too. I will segue from Pusha T to Push, who were like a New Zealand Screaming Jets.
Mm.
They were famous in the early 90s, and they're making a comeback because they're supporting the Darkness on the Darkness's next tour. And now, by now, they're all retired and fucking have families, or one of them's the fucking drive time DJ on a rock fucking FM station. But they've made a comeback and released a few new tracks, and they're no good.
Mm.
No good at all. But they had a song called Trippin', which you may have heard because it did cross the ditch. I know I'd heard it before I was tripping out on you. It was the most ridiculous hair metal you could imagine. And
that's saying something.
And that's New Zealand's contribution to that particular genre. So the Kendrick, you can tell, it was all explained to me by someone who tweeted saying, Kendrick is a big fan of Radiohead, particularly Tom York's later stuff.
Yeah, right.
And I think that explains a lot about what the gentleman is up to.
Mm.
Yeah,
I can't say I was that. But I just don't. I find it really hard to get excited about American hip hop. So
I've already had it excited about Kendrick. Because he's, I mean, if I want to listen to a man wanking next to a microphone, I'll listen to Ray Hadley on 2GB. I mean, it's just anybody who, where you cannot tell that you do not know whether he's trying to be a genius or trying to be a wanker is almost definitely being a wanker. So why are we taking this guy seriously?
Mm.
Anyway.
It's one of those things.
What I'm saying is more Def Leppard. We need more Def Leppard.
It's just one of those things I don't get. You know, I tried really hard, but
I know we'd listen to fucking to Pimp a Butterfly, and that album of fucking Leftover Jizz that he pretended was a whole bunch of stuff,
whatever it was.
Oh yeah, and he was at great pains to say that this was just something that he was in his back catalogue when he'd clearly spent a lot of time working on it and was his next fucking release. I was like, okay, mate, just soft pedal it a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I do, as I alluded to, I do love how every white person who has a following on Twitter has to pretend to care, has to make sure they tweet about how much they love.
I
kept seeing all the people, oh, the dude who writes for SBS Comedy has said this. Oh, look, that girl who has that job. Oh, look, that's really quite interesting how you all magically have an interest in this particular hip hop artist.
It's the big beard of the hipster.
Yes. Anywho, so the new album for next week is Kendrick. No, I wouldn't do that. Because I have to listen to it. I really wanted to pick Boss Hogg's new album. Boss Hogg have made a comeback after 15 odd years. So Boss Hogg is John Spencer, our of the Blues Explosion, and Christina Martinez and some various other people. Christina Martinez is his partner of the last 30 years. And they were kind of New York punks of the 80s and were a really searing, interesting band, sort of art punk. But they went on hiatus and Christina brought up the family and John went out to lead the Blues Explosion. And I'm a big fan of the John Spencer Blues Explosion. Problem is that Boss Hogg, like Blues Explosion, is not on Spotify. Fucking Spotify. So that whole spiel was a waste of fucking time. I wasted time, my time and yours. I apologise for that. So next week, I would like you to listen to an album by a band called Spoon.
Have heard of them before?
You don't have to. You don't have to say the name like that. In fact, I don't know whether it's spelled differently. If you say it like Spoon,
Hot Thoughts. You just
say, Hot Thoughts is the album. Slightly psychedelic album cover. I think they're out of Austin, Texas too. So there's an interesting link to Black Joe Lewis and the Marshawn Lynch impersonators. The other album I was going to pick for this week is by a fellow called Damien Cowell.
Yeah, right.
About Damien Cowell is that he used to go by the name Humphrey B. Flaubert in a little band called Tism.
What's the name of the album?
And the name of the album was called Get Your Dag On. This is a album, Damien Cowell and his Disco Machine. And it has lots of guest stars, including luminaries of music and comedy. I know Tony Martin is on a couple of tracks. All kinds of random people are on this. Now,
is this his song? This is going to be a YouTube one, I'm taking it?
No, it's on Spotify.
Not on Australian.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. He's an Australian artist.
How did you spell Damien?
I'm looking for the album name. That's why. Get Your Dag. D-A-G.
Get Your... Why don't you just look up Cowell?
Yeah, I couldn't find that either. Oh, there we go. I was spelling Damien wrong, that's why. Yes, Henry Rollins, Josh Pye.
Henry fucking Rollins is on this album.
This, I actually had...
It's Damien with an A, which is actually the wrong way to spell Damien.
I was looking for it with an E.
Mind you, that's the way that Damien Lillard spells his.
I had seen this kicking around a little bit a while ago. I think I saw the single on YouTube. Had sort of tagged it, but I'd forgotten about it because I don't think I tagged it on Spotify where I tag all my stuff. So,
yeah, I just thought, well, for all the old Tism nerds, and in a way, a bit of a hat tip to John Clark, for the same kind of... sense of humour. It's probably only two degrees of separation there with Tony Martin involved.
To be honest, you've picked this album because it's got a song called 365 Lemmys, isn't it?
No, I picked it because it was the dude from Tism. Literally, he had a song on his last album called I Was the Guy from Tism.
This will be fun.
Yeah, bit of calibre movement, stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently is... it's a fun kind of disco dance album. So, and Tism were really good at writing pop songs as well as having ridiculously filthy sense of social justice and comedic fucking timing. So, I'll be interested to see how it turns out.
So for the classic, I was going to go with one of the. We do this occasionally where we throw in a classic that neither of us have sort of listened to, but is a classic.
We haven't done that for a while.
Seen as a classic, and I ran into the same thing. I really wanted to pick a T-Rex album this week as a classic. Oh. Like going right back.
Chunk.
Yeah, it's got that real sort of, it's got a very distinctive sound, and their singles are fucking great singles, but the album I want to pick is only about a third on Spotify, so I want to go back and listen to a couple of the other albums and pick one out of there. So I'm going to go with Dave Graney and the Coral Snakes, The Soft and Sexy Sound from 1995.
Is that their biggest one?
Is that the one
that has Rock and Roll Is Where I Hide?
It does have that song, yeah.
That is their biggest one, then.
It's got that, and I'm Not Afraid to Be Heavy, so maybe it is, yeah.
What? Name another Dave Grady song.
That's probably a good point. Yeah. Just too hip. Night of the Wolverine. Feeling kind of sporty.
Oh, Feeling Kind of Sporty. Was that on this album as well?
Nope. Yeah, and nope. And okay.
That's the only other one. And I only know that one because Tony Martin used to play it on today on Austereo when he had Martin Malloy. Tony Martin heavy episode this week.
I'm going to keep my powder dry about this album. We did have
we had the other Tony Martin on last week. We had your mate Tony Martin.
Yeah,
from
that's
Blaston.
Right.
He used to play for the Storm. So it was one of four Tony Martins we could have mentioned.
Every week we're going to feature.
Every
another
week we're going to highlight a different Tony Martin. Martin. Next week we're going to talk about the German time trialer. Let's not do that.
I'll save my. I've got a little story about Dave from when he played at the Alley, which I probably told before, but I'll save that.
Does it involve a powder blue suit?
It does, but it also involves a pair of tracksuit pants, which I might not have told that part of it before.
Oh, to use a Bill Simmonsism, that's a fun wrinkle.
That's a fun wrinkle.
Because no one ever irons their tracksuit pants, so it's obviously a fun wrinkle. Who wants to see my fun wrinkle?
Dave Graney sort of seems like a throwback to a time that shouldn't still exist, but he's still kicking around.
And doesn't really, apart from outside the space that he exists in.
Yeah, like he still is like gigs constantly. I follow him on Twitter. He's always gigging. He's always got work. Still records, still puts out music. He's just one of those guys, you know.
So there was a dude on the north coast of New South Wales called Floyd Vincent who was a bit like Dave Graney. Same kind of
aesthetic.
Used to write weird songs. He got a little bit of Triple J action from a song called I Gave Myself to You. But it was the same kind of, it was a very Dave Graney sort of deal. So I'm glad to see Dave is still doing Dave things in a Dave way.
Yep. Cool. All right, Doc. I will catch you on the flip side.
That is us.
See you, mate.
Good night to you. Give me my beer.
See ya.
Fuck, I want chips now, you fucking bastard.